Hey, what's up, psychos? This is Dylan Palladino, and this is my podcast, We're All Psychos. Hell yeah, dude. And I just recorded a real good conversation with Dr. Ian Kerner. He is a psychotherapist, sex therapist in New York City. And it's great, man. We talk about his book, She Comes First, that I read and helped me, I'm going to be real with you guys, learn how to go down on a girl, and made me pretty confident in it. I'm not going to lie. And I've gotten some good responses. And that's enough of me talking about that I'm good at eating girls out. But we talk about that. We talk about taboo and sex, whether watching porn is good or bad for dudes and girls in general. But we do focus more on guys because we're both guys. And a lot of other good stuff, man. It's a fun episode. I've been trying to get him on for a while. I highly recommend reading his book, She Comes First. As a man or woman, or, you know, non-binary, it's very helpful, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I actually read it with my partner, God, I sound so fucking clinical, I read it with my ex-girlfriend, dumb bitch, no, I read it with my ex-girlfriend, she's a better person than me, and it really helped, so check out the book, check out his website, remember to rate and review, dude, we're getting those reviews up, I like to see it. Hey, I got a question for you guys. Some of you can answer. Would you rather me do a Sunday episode and a Wednesday episode, or a Sunday episode every 2 weeks and then the normal interview episodes on Wednesdays? I'm just trying to get a feel for what you guys are listening to more and enjoying more, because I watch the numbers go up and down, and I want to see, you know, I'm doing a little research. Want to see what you guys like, because I like doing all this, but it does take time, which I'm happy to do, but I want to give you guys the content you fucking want and desire, and that you're going to send to your friends and get more people to watch and listen, so I can make more fucking money doing this show. All right? So let me know. All right? And this will also be a test if... any of you guys care enough to actually hit me up and let me know. All right. That's it. That is it. I hope you guys have a good day. I hope you have a good week. I hope you're feeling good. I hope you're staying safe, man. All right. I hope your family's doing good too. All right. I'm gonna reach out the arm to your family as well. Thank you for listening. I love you all. Without further ado, hear the words you love to hear. Please welcome Dr. Ian Kerner.
Are you crazy? Are you crazy?
We're all psychos.
Fucking crazy, man. You said, hey, you like that? You like that?
With Dylan Palladino.
That is crazy.
Let's just start it, man. We're here. We're doing it. I'm here with Dr. Ian Kerner. I'm a very big fan. He has a book, She Comes First, and a bunch of other ones. He's a professional psychotherapist, sex therapist, a lot of titles, a lot of good titles, and he's done a lot of good stuff, including helping me understand how to go down on a girl, honestly. And it helped a lot, and I'm hoping to help more people know about his book, read his book, and realize, like, oh shit, this isn't that hard. And to help out with their lives, truly. Ian, thanks for being here, dude.
Yeah, I have a question based on the intro.
Yeah, dude, go for it.
Well, I'm just curious, you know. So you're a guy, you're, what age are you?
I'm 27.
You're 27. So, She Comes First is going on 20 years since it's been written and published and been out there. And I'm just wondering, so you think the topic is still... timely, still.
Hell yeah,
relevant.
Dude. Hell yeah. I as much as I think I saw online that you're it's been translated into what? How many languages?
Like a dozen languages.
A dozen? You know what? It needs to be translated into every language, and also like gifted, because I still think there's a weird stigma with dudes, which I'm not really sure why, where it comes from. But it seems to be everywhere. There seems to be something thought of as like unmanly about it. And still, even with my friends, dude, I'll sometimes, there's been conversations where, we've been talking, and I've talked about how like I've had a hookup with with someone, just like a one or two time thing, and I'll mention how I went down on them, and they're like, dude, you barely know her. And then in the same sentence, they'll be like, but did she suck your dick? And I'm like, dude, that's like, it's.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I asked because, you know, I wrote the book a long time ago, and there's been the explosion of like the internet and mm-hmm. digital videos and social media and so much more awareness around sexuality. So I was just wondering if, you know, the topic was still as timely as certainly when I wrote the book, you know?
Yeah. What made you want to write the book?
Well, wow, man, if I go back, there's a personal story and there's a professional story.
Let's hear, honestly, both of them. But I want to hear the personal one for sure first.
Yeah, you know, the personal story is that my whole adult and young adult sexual life, I had suffered pretty badly from sexual dysfunction, mm-hmm. namely premature ejaculation, often gets called early ejaculation these days. But I really struggled and suffered with that. And I thought I was sort of like living alone in a vacuum. I didn't realize what an immense issue it was until I started becoming a sex therapist. Mm-hmm. So I started reading research and I learned that even more than erectile disorder or erectile impairment, whatever term you want to use, that early ejaculation was one of the most common issues that men faced. But when I was growing up, man, it was like, you know, I'm in my 50s. This was going back to the 70s and the 80s. Like, there was no internet. There were no men's health magazine. There was like the Alfred Kinsey report from the 40s.
Like, all you could do is talk to your friends about it, and then they would just be like, they would just lie and say, no, dude, there's something wrong with you. I never come quick. And you're like, okay. Right.
And like, I'm going to talk to my friends in like the early 80s about early ejaculation. No fucking way.
Hell no.
And of course, you're not talking to women about it, and you're not talking to your parents about it.
No. I'd rather come quickly for the rest of my life than talk to my dad about coming quick.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, you know, I know early ejaculation, it's often like a gag or a joke mm-hmm. in movies, you know, it's like the button on a joke.
The guy's like, oh, no. But, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like for most men I work with, and certainly for me, it was a chronic, persistent problem. And so I just couldn't use my penis the way I wanted to. And so I felt, you know, I felt really depressed and bummed out and stopped dating at one point. And so really, way before becoming a sex therapist, way before writing She Comes First, my personal journey to becoming sexually healthy, to being able to make love, was to shift really from this idea of intercourse as the main event to outer course. In doing so, like, listen, if I had just been a guy with a problem writing about a problem, I don't think I would have, like, tapped any kind of universal nerve. But really, in shifting from intercourse to outer course, mm-hmm. manual stimulation, oral stimulation, what it really taught me, and I learned firsthand power and centrality of clitoral stimulation mm-hmm. in making love to a female partner. And so I kind of went from being ill-clitorate to clitorate.
Oh yeah, ill-clitorate. Yeah. I remember. Yeah, that's, you made up that term, right? In the book.
I made up that term.
I think you got a few terms you made up with. Yeah, I can't believe it's 20 years ago. Damn. So you can't. Wow. You can't, so like 2000, around the 2000s, you wrote
is
this.
Is when I probably started thinking about the book. I think it published 2004.
Okay.
May of 2004 was the official publication.
But that's when it first started. Was there like a certain instance? Because I, from the time I became sexually active, have had issues with both being premature and also just having straight up like ED. And it just not working, getting in my head. And then it's this vicious cycle where like where it starts and begins, it then just plays on each other. That record gets deeper and deeper, kind of like filled into it. And so I was always like, what's wrong with me? How am I going to get past this? What do I have to use to figure it out? But was there like one moment where you had a particularly bad experience where you're like, dude, I got to figure out something else? Or was it just like the combination is being compounded?
I think it was just multiple issues and trying to hide it and lie about it and make up excuses.
Yeah.
Finally, it just became a constant source of rumination, and I couldn't get it out of my head. What's interesting, though, is your generation, I feel like your generation suffers much more from erectile disorder, psychological erectile unpredictability.
Definitely.
In my generation, like back then, ED was usually much more of an organic nature for older men.
Yeah.
And your generation, I mean, I see a lot of guys your age and younger, really psychological ED is probably the number one issue.
Oh, yeah, dude. I know that because I talk about it and I've mentioned how I've taken like PED. I call them PEDs, performance enhancing drugs. I've taken those, and then you would be so surprised by how many dudes will text me like, "Yo, where'd you get that, by the way? Like, can I have a couple?" Da da. It's like dudes are dealing with this, whether it's because of porn, whether it's because of them just being in their head, or there's so many reasons why.
Yeah, I don't know. I think porn is secondary.
Okay.
I think porn is secondary to the primary issue being nervousness, performance anxiety, a sense of expectations. I think men sometimes blame it on porn because men watch a lot of porn and masturbate a lot, and they're able to get erections and ejaculate via porn without a problem. So then they have the issue with real sex, and they sort of say, well, maybe the issue is that I'm overdoing it with porn. But I think really, really masturbation and porn are kind of pressure free and easy.
That's what I think it is. It's like when you're, if you're jacking off or you're just completely calm. No one's watching you. There's no expectations. You get to like just do what you like. And also, I mean, I've always kind of thought the whole getting nervous and leading to ED and stuff like that is because your sympathetic nervous system is being activated, when in reality your like parasympathetic needs to be more alive for you to be able to
Dylan, give me 1 second. I'm really sorry here. I got an emergency text from my teenage son.
Go ahead, no worries.
He's put money on his credit card.
Oh God, okay. That is important. Yes. Yeah, go for it.
Emergency. Can I curse on your show?
Yeah, of course, dude. Of course.
It's an emergency for him. He's texting me.
Dad, I need money.
Why do I have this stupid credit card?
He's threatening you. Good. That's a good son. You know what? I remember when I was a teenager, around the time that I really started to just threaten my dad continuously. And I haven't stopped, you know?
Yeah, I'm saying we'll talk later.
Yeah.
You can get a job, though.
Oh, yes, dude. Yes. That's so good. I mean, my dad still does that now.
It's okay. I am working, but it's okay.
Yeah.
He's sorry now. He's sorry because I said get a job.
I mean, he's like, you're right, Dad, but just help me out, you know?
All right, man. Sorry about that.
That's good. That's no worries. I remember my when I was in college, I had a credit card that my dad allowed me to use, but it wasn't like you use this anywhere. It was like you use this. Hold on, let's pause for a second. It was like, you use this for books, and then if you're like out of money or like if you need food, you can use this. But he always was like, I can't wait to cut that card up as soon as blah, blah, blah. I'm going to cut it off anytime. He just loved holding that shit over my head and just being like, you got to work more. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, go very quickly from being the son to the dad. You start understanding both sides. You know?
Oh, I understand it a lot more. How old and what age range is your son?
I have two sons. They're 17 and 14.
Interesting.
And see, and the charge just came up, and it wasn't even for food. It was for a convenience store. And I know he's buying like a fucking vape pen.
Oh, he's buying a Juul.
And some THC cartridge illicitly or something.
Oh, my God.
So here I am, not even being hassled for food. I'm probably being hassled.
You're being hustled for some THC and dopamine is what you're being hustled for. Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So we'll get back to what we were talking about, but having two sons as a therapist and psychotherapist and who are teenagers, it must be kind of an interesting dynamic because one, you remember being a teenager, but now that you've studied and gotten like Is it hard to try to not psychoanalyze your kids when what they're going through?
No, I don't want to deal with my kids. When I get home, I don't want to psychoanalyze them. I don't want to get into their heads.
I don't mean them like sitting down on the couch, but if they're complaining to you about some shit or you see like you're like, oh, this one's been very he's been a lot more aggressive recently. Like, I wonder what's going on.
Well, yeah, I have tons of behavioral issues. Like I could probably diagnose between both my sons. I could probably throw out their bipolar, schizophrenic, borderline personality, oppositional disorder. You name
oppositional disorder for sure.
No, they're good. They're good kids. They're just trying to get by. And you know, we have a very, you know, like part of the whole thing is maintaining a sex positive home.
That's good.
That starts with really my relationship with my wife and, you know, being sex positive. And, you know, the older one is bringing his girlfriend home right now and bringing her over. So it's a lot of
How did you, because you had your two kids and you had them with your wife. How did you guys talk about the, I don't want to call it right because everyone has their way of raising a child, but the way that you wanted to raise your kids around sex and being able to talk about it in what you think is the most positive, beneficial way?
Yeah, I don't know that we ever sat down and really figured it out. I mean, I find that most people grow up in one of three kinds of home environments, either a sex positive environment where sexuality and curiosity and masturbation and experimentation and communication are embraced.
Yeah.
That was not the home that I grew up in.
Me neither.
I grew up in this, the second type of home, which is more what I would call sex evasive. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't get talked about at all.
Yep.
It's like sex vacuum. And then the third environment would be sex negative, people are subject to shame and guilt and really negative messages.
Catholicism. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All that good stuff. Yeah. I think I was more sex evasive. And it's so interesting how we're like, cause I mean, my household, like violence was openly shown and talked about, and it's like, especially in American culture, it's like violence is completely accepted. But then talking about sex, which is again, like another, because to me, it's like there's all this violent porn, which people are okay with watching. But then actual porn, no one wants to talk about that.
Right.
You know,
what do you mean by violence porn? You just mean like video games?
I mean, I don't know how I feel about video games being actually, you know what? Yes. Even though I don't know, I don't think video games are necessarily bad. There are video games that I play now where you see a guy's head like almost explode, and that's completely okay. And there's also, you know, now there's all these websites, World Star Hip Hop, Hood Site, all this shit, where you can see someone actually be murdered by the cartel, or you can see someone get into a freak accident and half their face is fucked up, or like there's a lot of I've seen a lot of bad shit, you know, but for whatever reason, like if I had that video and showed my pops, he'd probably be much more okay, or be like, Dylan, you probably shouldn't watch that. But if I was like, oh, yo, let's talk about whatever, most people would much rather talk about violence. And I'm curious why we as a society are more comfortable with violence, I think, than sex.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I have the answer. It's a big question. And certainly when you compare, you know, the violence and obscenity of just, you know, our daily news cycle and what we have to experience, and you compare that to porn, you do wonder, like, why are we coming out so strongly against porn? All I can really say is that, you know, really going back to the birth of Christianity, especially with St. Augustine, that there's been a huge agenda to vilify any form of premarital
pleasure.
Sex. any kind of sex that's non-procreative. I mean, mm-hmm. the first model of sex in the Christian era that was really espoused yeah. was purely procreative sex. Okay. Sex, the missionary position was designed to be as pleasureless and as procreative as possible, right? That was yeah. the emphasis. Priests were the ideal, you know, just don't have sex at all.
Yes.
But if you do have to have sex, it better be procreative, it better be married sex, and it should be as pleasureless as possible. Which, it's only over time that we started to enshrine relational, romantic sex, recreational mm-hmm. sex. And so I think like all of the criticism against porn is really just going back to sex negativity.
Okay, to a certain... So that partially could have probably also been a reaction to Christianity comes up and they're like, okay, we need to form this religion, right? And they're forming it, they're writing it, they're basing off of everything. And they probably want to differentiate themselves from the other, which they seem as the pagans, the people that are having the enjoyable sex. So they're just like, okay, let's do the opposite. That's all wrong. The only way to do it...
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, you're totally right. Like pre-Christian sex, whether you're looking at, classical Greece, mm-hmm. Roman culture, Hebraic culture, was all much more sex open and sex positive. It wasn't even so much Christ. I mean, Christ said very little about sex except yeah. in criticizing adultery. It was really one dude, Saint Augustine, who is really so messed up about his own sexuality. See, I shouldn't even go here because what's going to happen is this is going to get posted.
And no, this is great. This is great.
I'm going to get shot. You know?
No way, dude. Yeah.
I always get crucified by the right, by the Fox News.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Because you're so open about it?
Because I write for CNN.
Okay, that's why.
In a very sex positive way.
Yeah, that's why.
Like, for example, I was covering a research study on cuckolding as a sexual fantasy uh-huh. and how it's a positive sexual fantasy.
You think
and
so? Like,
what's that?
You think
Do
so?
I think so? I was actually just quoting the research, which shows it's a very popular sexual fantasy, not even necessarily to enact, just to fantasize about. The idea of men watching their wives having sex with someone else.
So interesting because I remember I had that, I had that thought once with an ex and it made me viscerally angry and like I wanted to commit a crime. So
because you had the fantasy?
I didn't fantasize like I liked it, but I thought about like I remember I saw a dude who, it's so dumb how your brain works, especially as like a testosterone ridden like egotistical dude. I saw some other guy that I thought I was like, yeah, my girlfriend would want to hook up with that dude, and it made me like angry. And by the way, she probably wasn't into that guy,
right?
That was probably my weird attraction to that dude, but instead I was like, nah, she wants to fuck that dude. That makes me mad.
Right No, I hear you. So it's a popular fantasy. And a lot of couples actually enjoy enacting it, but a lot of people like fantasizing it. I was just writing about a study, and Fox went crazy and Tucker Carlson went crazy. I must have gotten hundreds of emails about, like, I'm going to come and cuckold your wife while you
I'm going to come fuck your wife, bro. It's like, no, you're not.
So I'm always, like, loathe.
Wow, that's it's always so crazy to me, these people that write emails, that like take the time out to find your email and are like, oh, this guy thinks I should watch my wife fuck someone else. I'm gonna tell him that I'm gonna fly to New York and then fuck his wife, and then he's, I guess by that logic, gonna like it, so then I'm helping him.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I think you must be Jewish too. So I'm gonna like doubly fuck your wife. Because you're Jewish.
Yeah, I'm going to fuck your Jewish wife. And that's going to show. That will show that you're the Jew that's been hiding. It's like, oh, my God, dude. Wow. That is crazy. I mean, yeah, you're just like writing about these. Why do you think it's more prevalent now? Do you think maybe because our generation doesn't give a fuck about marriage as much before, or people are more open to.
What's the question, Dylan?
Like, why do you? Because you were saying that you were researching about,
reporting on a research
stuff, yeah.
You know, that had come out, because I try and stay. You know, I write for CNN every now and then. I try and stay abreast of the latest research, and you know, I mean, listen, I'm happy that we have moved, you know, away from a purely procreative model to one that's much more relational, and finally to one that's like recreational. And I think part of the problem in our society is that we don't embrace the recreational aspects as much as the relational. We're all about mated pair bonding, love making within a couple. And listen, I'm married for 20 plus years. I'm all about love making within a couple, but we also have these wild sexual imaginations.
Urges,
have to indulge, and we want to keep sex interesting. Otherwise, we're just going to end up, you know, cheating
or being unhappy.
You know? And listen, and there's nothing wrong with being non-monogamous unless your stated value is to be monogamous.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you can't do the thing after where you're like, I thought we were open. Like, yeah, that's because that's the being a liar.
But let's go back to oral sex. That's my favorite. All this political stuff just tires me out these days.
Oh, does it? And oh, it's so interesting for me to just be like, let's
you want to talk about like Augustine and how he struggled with his own sex addiction and
yes, I want to talk about all of that shit.
And then came to a view that really was like so shame-based, you know?
I think people are just feel shame over really liking things half the time. And I don't know if that's a human emotion or that's taught, but it is something where like, why would he all of a sudden be like, do you find that with people that you've treated? Like, what do you think is this basis of shame in people around things like that?
Well, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's like, you know, you're born, you're a kid, and for a little while when you're a kid, you kind of get to make believe and use your imagination and kind of have playtime. And then almost immediately, as of like kindergarten, work begins, whether it's the work of learning to count or learning to read, and play, true play, becomes secondary to work.
And
or play is organized as a form of sport, you know, but that that totally just unbridled creative imaginative play is never really nurtured. In fact, it's really stamped out. And so I think it's more like the playful parts of our sexuality never even get language. They never get exercise. They never even learn words, you know?
Yeah, you're right. They're not nurtured and allowed to grow. And people aren't eating.
And so then, you know, and so then as a result, you grow up with like this part of yourself. Well, it was like me back when I was like 18 and 19, like totally interested in being sexual, totally interested in intense erotic experiences, and not even being able to open my mouth to talk about the sex that I was having.
Yeah, you couldn't talk about it. And I think a lot of people probably feel that, which leads them towards, I don't know, this has been a thought that I have, like, there's all this talk about kinks now and people being kink positive and like allowing you to do whatever. And part of me thinks some of those are just things you like, you know, so, like you just realize for a reason, like, oh, this thing kind of excites me. But I've also kind of thought as they get like crazier and more open, part of me thinks people still kind of want sex to be wrong. So they need to like find something that is maybe exciting or taboo about it by adding all of those. And I will say this is coming from a biased perspective of someone who I've never really had anything kinky that I liked. For me, because maybe I've had at least one parent that was more open about it and no one that ever shamed me, I was always like, look, I like having sex. I like recreationally having sex with different people, but there's nothing ever I need to do that's insane in it. I just like to, I don't know, at least like the person most of the time, because if not, it can get kind of boring. But it seems people are like always pushing for some kind of taboo in it.
Right. Well, you know, Dylan, again, if on the subject that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. if you say to yourself, well, the standard has been a very sort of constricted procreative sex.
Yeah.
That's sort of the thing that's always been held out. That always stands in contrast to the wildness and quirkiness of our individual imaginations. I think if we really could live without shame and without taboo, our sexual imaginations, the relationships we structured, mm-hmm. they'd probably be a lot less constrained. And I think so. I think almost any kind of sex that's non-traditional has a taboo quality. And to me, we'll never live in this world, but I'm very curious, if we lived in a world without all of these constrictions and taboos,
yeah.
what kind of sexual people would we actually be? We might be much more fluid, much more perverse, much mm-hmm. more open, you know?
Or do you think because everything was open and like normalized or allowed, we would kind of have maybe phases or get through it, and then we'd be like, you know, I did that, and now it's kind of, it's not a direct one-on-one argument, but it's like the difference between letting a child start to taste wine at 12 or 13, like, you know, they do in Europe, or in America where we just binge at 18 and black out for 5 years, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree with that. I mean, to me, like, you said, like, what's the power of a taboo? Well, I think the power of the way taboos get used, kink gets used in some cases, is because we are trying to keep sex exciting. We're trying to create, you know, peak sexual experiences. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we'd be capable of creating peak sexual experiences and engage in behaviors like submission and domination and voyeurism and exhibitionism mm-hmm. and oral sex and masturbation and mutual masturbation and watching porn together. I think there's capacity to still enjoy all of these things without them unfortunately getting put in the bucket of having to be taboos.
Yeah. And I think if they were more, I think what's interesting is that for someone like me, who's on one side of that spectrum where I'm, at least for now, not very interested in any of that, you almost feel like, what's up with me that I don't want to do any of those? At least for me as a millennial dude who's 27, like a lot of guys or a lot of people you hear about, oh, I'm doing this and then yeah. whips and mutual.
Yeah.
yeah. And you're like, well, what if I just like being with one person and enjoying yeah. it and we both like come, dude?
You know, sexuality and typical sexuality occurs across such a spectrum. Like
yeah.
I relate to what you're saying, which is I like feeling personally attached to the person I'm having sex with.
100%.
I'm very sensually oriented. I get very involved in like mm-hmm. the sensual experience of my wife's body and the way she smells and mm-hmm. tastes. And like, that's all yeah. really a turn on for me. But a lot of people are more psychologically oriented in how they get aroused, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
Some people enjoy the sensual, but the thing that really turns them on is some kind of fantasy or some kind of like, you know, psychological experience. So I just think the ways in which we mm-hmm. get aroused are different. And we all have capacities to get aroused in different ways. Like sometimes I will really enjoy the psychological
yeah.
or the kink. Or something that feels a little fetish based, like.
Yes.
But I think my dominant sexual style and personality uh-oh. Is root based sensual approach.
Yeah, and I think it might be, at least to a certain degree, split along some kind of gender lines, because I feel like from the women that I've talked to, some kind of story or an imagination kind of helps them a lot more than men who are very visual oriented or orientated.
Yeah.
I don't know which is the right word. Which I think is always interesting.
Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, men in my experience, and this is a generality and I hate to speak in generalities, but just to be a little general,
Let's be general.
Men often are, able to experience what would be called spontaneous desire, or they're able to see something sexy, notice something sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Think of something sexy and metabolize that sexual cue very quickly into a sense of desire that they can act on, right? So it's like a highly reactive, spontaneous kind of feeling of desire.
Very reactive.
And studies have shown that women tend to experience more of a percolation of sexual cues, that women can notice things that are sexy, experience things that are sexy, but it doesn't always lead to that same immediate desire to have sex.
Yeah.
And so part of that percolation of sexual cues might mean like engaging your sexual imagination, not only so that you can get turned on, but so that you can also turn off the things that are getting in the way.
Yeah, your mind.
Like imagine, like you said, well, you suffered from erectile
impotence. I still do, dude. Yeah.
You still do.
Yeah.
Right? Because your mind, what? Your mind gets too involved in your...
You think about this. You think, am I really into this? Is it going to happen again? Like, what are they going to... All that stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's an anxiety running in the background.
Right. And do you ever think about stuff a little bit outside of the bedroom? Like, what about my job or my work?
You know, the job or the other stuff doesn't come out. You know what I think a lot of times does come into, at least my mindset, is unless you're really, and I found this with when you're hooking up with people casually. And I think this happens more, especially with the, I'm very for the apps, but I think people need to like think about how they use that software because it can lead to, I think, a lot of pitfalls. But a lot of times you're in it. And I think unless you're very, very attracted to that person, there's spark, there's intensity, there's your full attention is on them. You'll start to get distracted and think, what am I even really doing here? Am I really even like that? That will start to play in the background for me because I'm not fully engrossed in that person, you know?
Right.
But because of hookup culture, sorry, you think like, well, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be having fun. Like, yeah, everyone says like, let's have fun. And you go, okay, well, what if I'm not even really feeling this?
Right. So you sort of come across a little bit of like cultural and existential anxiety. Like, what's the purpose of this? What is this all about? And that starts running through your head as kind of a stream of thought. What do you do then? And that stream of thought, that anxiety can shut down your erections, right? I guess at some point, do you start to panic a little bit? Am I going to get erect?
For sure, 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You panic or you go like, what happens if this does lead to that? Because you might feel how the date is going and you go, damn, if this leads to that, like, am I even really gonna? You start living in the future, which is what anxiety is, you know?
Right. And as soon as your body picks up anxiety, even small levels of anxiety, it starts to shift into that sort of panic-based fight or flight
sympathetic
mode,
right?
Yeah, and so blood sort of capillaries into the penis and arteries into the penis start to close. Blood starts to redirect towards your feet for flight or your hands for fight, and that adrenaline response, I mean, adrenaline is really the enemy of erection, you know,
which sucks because I love adrenaline,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So what are you going to do to sort of stop that panic response?
You know, I've thought about there are things you can do. There are like breathing exercises you can do that can take your body from sympathetic to parasympathetic, which sometimes helps. But it's also so hard to like when you're with someone to be like, all right, I'm listening to them. And also, let me do some box breathing where I'm four in, hold, four out. I mean... It's really trying to, the only thing I've seen help is trying to let that record run, kind of completely let it run its course, because, you know, thoughts are going to go, and if you latch onto them, you can stay with them. But if you kind of let them just pass by to a certain degree, a lot of times they can extinguish themselves, and then trying to focus on that person as much as you can. But I mean, I will admit sometimes you're there and you're like, this probably isn't going to work out, but I don't know. I've talked about this before, but like as a dude, you're like, well, I'm already here. Like I need to do this as a man. And
right. So I find like, I think you're really right, Dylan. And I find like a lot of guys, like, because the emphasis is really on intercourse, mm-hmm. they don't give themselves a long enough outer course runway. They don't give themselves enough time to really generate that arousal, to really distract themselves from that record that's running around in their head. So, you know, definitely like really getting curious and interested and near experience to mm-hmm. the person and the body and the soul that you're generating pleasure with. But I think that's also where psychological stimulation can be really powerful, which comes back to what you said was a difference between that you've observed between men and women, that women often seem to focus on some kind of story mm-hmm. or some kind of fantasy. Well, if you as a guy could distract yourself from your own anxieties through fantasy and through that might be a powerful way of getting aroused.
Of helping, yeah. Right? But I think also a lot of times it can mean that, I think it depends where you are, like in your life. For dudes out there that are potentially dealing with this, I think it also might mean maybe you're done doing the casual thing. And maybe what your body or your mind is trying to tell you is like, yo, you're trying to find someone that you're really into, because if not, part of you doesn't even feel like it's fully worth your time, you know? And there are like these underlying like psychological motivations that you might not even be aware of, or feelings that, because sometimes I feel like our mind, or what is, because there's a difference between the brain and the mind. I think our brain notices something about our mind and how we're feeling and like makes a decision before we're fully aware of it. Some people might call it subconscious, whatever you want to do. But you have to then realize like, oh shit, it's when people go like, oh, this isn't what I want and I didn't know, or my guts, all those different reactions. It's like when you aren't in tune with that, that's when you make these decisions that you go, I don't even know why I'm doing this.
Yeah. And I think during sex, like not only allowing yourself to communicate so that you're creating like a feedback loop, but really allowing yourself to get rhythmically connected and rhythmically in sync with someone. Mm-hmm. I think everything that you're talking about, that you're experiencing with your brain and mind and body mm-hmm. makes sex even more challenging, because you got to get in sync and in tune with somebody else.
Yeah. Which I think is harder now because we're not even in sync with ourselves. So how are we going to get in sync with someone else? You had said earlier about like the different types of, because like people are cheating and there's like different types of sexual urges that you have, like in a relationship. And I kind of wanted to just talk about more. Do you think there's a point in your relationship where, because I've talked to like many dudes who I'm friends with who they're all in relationships and they'll go, oh, I saw this girl and I still wanted to, like, basically dudes in relationships after like 3 or 4 years, they like get this itch to like, I would like to have sex with someone else. And I think a lot of them feel bad about it. They feel shame or whatever. And I've always said, I don't think that's going to ever go away, because I think that's just, there's this like procreation urge in you that's always going to just pop up. But like, how do you deal with that as someone that said, I am in a relationship, I'm committed to this, I know like logically this is what I want to be doing, but then there are these primal urges that are going to come up that I shouldn't deny, but also kind of move past?
Yeah. It's hard, right? Like if as a dude, you're in a spontaneous desire framework, mm-hmm. right? Like all your life, looking back to your first observations about your own sexuality, mm-hmm. you've noticed sexual cues and things about the type of person you're attracted to has turned you on, right?
Like
that becomes your framework. And it's kind of nuts if you're in a relationship with someone who used to be able to turn you on like that in the beginning, the dudes that you're describing.
Yeah.
And now 4 years in, they still feel spontaneous desire when they're out in the world, or that highly reactive desire, but they don't anymore when they're at home. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that becomes a bigger philosophical or existential challenge. Like, what's wrong? Is it the relationship? Is it, is it me? Like, why do I not feel like myself anymore, you know, in this relationship? And you're right. What if that's a natural sort of passage?
Progression.
What if that's like a natural progression and shift? How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fact that out in the world or out on the internet, you're still like this total dude who responds to, you know, sexual cues with this physical feeling, this physical call to act. It's a big challenge, right?
Yeah, it's like there's a difference between the initial lust that you maybe have for someone when you're first are with them that then changes to, I can't remember if you wrote about this in your book, but I've definitely read it, where there's the switch from short-term to long-term love. And they're different types of love, and you should not expect to have both all the time, because they kind of do different things. Like, one, almost, if you want to look at it just like evolutionarily or biologically, like, one is, oh, as a dude, gotta just procreate, keep the species going. And another one is, oh, I'm deciding to pair bond with this person and at least raise kids for, until they're viable, I don't know, 15, 16, 18, I mean, 18 in our society, but, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Helen Fisher writes, I write about it a little bit, but really the person who influences me is Helen Fisher, is the first person that comes to mind. She wrote about, like, sort of there being three brain systems that sort of come together to form romantic love. The first would, in a man especially, but in a woman too, would be a testosterone-based seeking system. Okay. Like, oh, that person turns me on. I'm attracted to that person. Let me go sleep with that person or try to pursue that person. Meh, I slept with that person. It's not really love at first sight, or it's not my thing, or we went on a few dates and I don't feel
Dude, that happens and you feel bad about it.
Right. Well, that's the seeking system of your brain being operationalized. I mean, you got to seek, right? You got to be able to, like, seek and discard. I hate to use that word, like, seek, discard, right? Like, but that's what we're doing. We are seeking. Mm-hmm. Now, then what's interesting, and that's a very testosterone-based approach.
Yeah.
Then what's interesting, though, is sometimes somebody gets through, right?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, I really want to see this person again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually thinking, like, where are they? Who are they with? What are they doing right now? Why are they not with me? Like, what if they're with somebody else? Like, I want to hold and merge and be with this person for a much longer period of time. That's a different brain system that's operating.
Oh.
And that's now, you know, a brain system that Helen Fisher might call it, like, the limerence system, or a more romantic love system, or an infatuation system, but it's certainly more dopamine driven.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, like, we're not seeking the world, we're just seeking one person.
And it feels addictive because of that dopaminergic, whatever the hell you call it.
Yeah, whatever it is, but we've shifted from seeking the generality of a partner in the world to really just seeking one person that we can name and identify. And that's sort of that infatuation system that, in my experience, does last for a couple of years, two or 3 years even, you know? And meanwhile, you're moving into a different brain system, which is much more of an attachment-based system, where we are creating the long-term attachments to potentially create this, you know, pair bond. I mean, this is murky. Too many gay and lesbian patients who don't have the same procreative agendas and are still creating very rich, long, monogamous relationships. So it's really hard to just use gender, biology, or evolution. But, you know, speaking as one person who's been married for, you know, 20 plus years, you know, I did something that a lot of my patients don't always do, which is one of the main factors in which I picked my wife, mm-hmm. and I think she picked me, had a lot to do with sexual chemistry, had a lot to do with,
I think it's helpful,
sexual attraction, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of my patients sort of say it wasn't that strong in the beginning, or I thought it might develop, or this person was really,
I think
more
it's a
of my best friend.
Yeah. Not for everyone, but I think that's what you did, at least for me, I think is what's going to be the same thing, because when it's not there, you're just like, I don't know. It feels like a big part of the relationship. Maybe not for everyone. Maybe if someone, for whatever reason, their sex drive is like not that high. But for you, you're saying it was a big part, and that's probably helped, you think, make it last.
Well, it was a huge part that I really, it wasn't the, now listen, prior to my wife, mm-hmm. I'd been in relationships that were totally sexually driven, where everything
yes.
about the choice was just based
just
on this
person. She's hot.
Is so
hot. Yeah. Her tits, dude. That's why we're in this. Yeah.
And, you know, that didn't end up.
No way.
To the long term. But you can't, but see what happens to a lot of people, men and women, is they sort of say, oh, I had all these initial sexual things that didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So clearly I shouldn't be selecting or picking just for the sex piece. Let me go for some other relational quality mm-hmm. in this partner. And they sort of forget about the sex part.
Yeah, which is probably why a lot of marriages or long-term relationships you might see, they're not having as much sex, but it's because they chose for other factors that they maybe thought were more important to them.
Yeah, I think that that's part of it. And then, you know, the other thing, Dylan, is so once you have picked a partner who can be both great on a relational level and you also have a ton of sexual attraction to, mm-hmm. How do you keep that sexual attraction nurtured?
Yeah. Bring it back to what we were saying in the beginning. Like, if it starts to fall off, does that mean you're no longer in it? Does that mean that there's something going on in your life that you're not facing? Or, like, what's the way to, I mean, people say keep the spark going, but is there anything that you've noticed that's helped you to at least reignite it at certain times in your life?
Yeah. And you're right to use the word reignite, because, you know, if you really want to have a lot, I guess talking to you individually, it sounds like your goal is to have a long-term partner to mm-hmm. eventually be married, to maybe
sure.
have kids down the line.
Hell and, yeah.
Have a family, and the idea that hopefully you'll stay together for what constitutes a lifetime.
Yeah. I come from parents that are divorced. So I'm like, really don't want to do that. Even though I'm happy that they got divorced because it was for the best and now they're happier with their second partners, I'm still like, it'd be nicer to get it on the first time.
I really respect that. And I will say that life will throw so many obstacles at you. Like, I think of just myself raising these two sons mm-hmm. and really one of them has, you know, some psychological issues mm-hmm. and my wife and I mean, we probably disagree on so many things at any different time. There has to be so much compromise and negotiation across so many domains of life that I'm so glad that we have this core sexual attraction and pleasure that we can sort of drop into. It really creates a constant reserve of positivity mm-hmm. and positive intentionality. How do we maintain that, man? Well, first of all, now you can imagine as somebody that's struggled my whole life with early ejaculation mm-hmm. and has always been working on improving from that point, right? If I had a partner who is just purely intercourse focused or who wasn't open to oral sex and outer force, right?
Yeah.
Right. So it's like not just having sexual chemistry with my life. It's about being engaged in the sexual behaviors and a kind of a sexual environment that we can both extrapolate tremendous pleasure from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely very helpful. I think, we move so far past this, but like, why do you think there's such a taboo with guys going down? Because to bring it back to the reason I even discovered you, so She Comes First was my girlfriend at the time, like, I don't know, 7 years ago, she recommended that we get it. We got it. We started reading it together. And I'm not even going to lie to you. I didn't finish the book because even in the beginning, I was like, this is helping a lot. And it did help a lot. You know what your book did that was the most helpful? So, because in the past couple of years, it's been like a lot more mainstream. People are like, oh, so people think the clit is just this one little dot, but it's actually this like spider thing that goes all around. And everyone was like, do you know what a clit actually looks like? And I'm like, yeah, bitch, I've known since 2013, dude. All right. I've known since more than some of you guys knew. But I remember when I saw that, it really helped me kind of understand, like, all right, it's all over the place. Like you can, but.
That's right. The clitoris responds to persistent, consistent stimulation of the vulva. And like the penis that grows outward, you have to remember, men and women, we are formed from the same tissue, the same embryonic material. It all exists to be used and nothing gets discarded or wasted. So just as penises grow outward, clitorises really grow inward. Mm-hmm. And there's so much sensitive tissue and nerve fiber that really kind of wraps around pretty much the surface of the vulva extending inwards around the first third of the vagina.
Yeah.
And so vaginal stimulation can be very, very pleasurable, especially in combination with direct clitoral stimulation of the vulva. But so you can combine really intense external with internal stimulation to create a lot of pleasure.
A lot of fun, yeah. Which I think a lot of dudes don't understand that because we're just built, like it's very much, you don't need a manual to figure out what to do, you know?
Right. You know, it's interesting though, Dylan, you said that like it's so taboo for men. You're right. I find that there are two kinds of female readers of She Comes First. Mm-hmm. No, I actually find two types of women come into my practice in terms of their points of view around oral sex. Some women are very much like, I want more direct clitoral stimulation. I want more satisfying sex. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, most intercourse positions really don't stimulate the vulva externally and don't stimulate the clitoris. And there's what would be called a clitoral vaginal distance between the glands of the clitoris, what most men would identify as the clit, and the vaginal entrance. There's a gap of a distance of like 3 to 5 centimeters,
a couple of inches. Yeah.
Right. And depending upon that distance, that can really make huge differences in how intercourse feels. So a lot of women come in wanting better sex, wanting more clitoral stimulation, wanting more oral sex or using sex toys or, and then a lot of women come in sort of feeling like, whoa, like intercourse is one thing, but having a guy go down on me requires a lot of extra vulnerability.
Yeah. Women feel a lot more vulnerable when that's done to them than dudes do on the opposite.
Exactly. Women. Well, I think isn't this about like how women have been historically body shamed so much more than men?
Yeah, for sure.
About their bodies. So, of course, that body shame extends to genital self-esteem. How is my vulva going to taste? How does it look?
Yes.
How does it smell? Does he really want to be doing this? Like those are
all going on in their head, which are going to prevent them from enjoying it. And I also will say, I just think dudes are grosser, so we don't really give a shit. So it's like, we're like, yeah, go down. I don't give a shit, blah, blah, blah. Where like women are going to be more aware and at least thinking of that stuff, where the guys, we're already turned off and we're like, my dick's hard, put it somewhere, you know? And it's frozen. There we go. Cool. Yeah.
Sorry about the freezing. I don't know if that's on my end.
You never know. And you know what? It's probably for the best that we don't, because then you would just be like, oh, I'm fucking up or they're fucking up. Yeah. So they're, but So there's different women that are trying to figure out how to be more comfortable with that. And the reasons I think are pretty easy, like you said, to point out and to understand. But I'm still curious, why as men there's such a taboo with us doing it, and why it's even been portrayed as like emasculine? Or
so tell me a little bit more about that and what you're experiencing.
It was definitely a thing in Italian culture, not with me, but you've heard like people talk about it. I've heard dudes be like, oh, that's like kind of makes you a bitch, or why are you gonna go like there's I've definitely heard that, and maybe it's a power thing, but I've always kind of thought it was like more of a, I always thought of it as more manly to do, because then at the end of the day, like you're doing even more, and you get to at the end, like because if you really get into, you want to be like, oh, you have to come and all this shit. But like, if you're doing that, it's going to be more likely that you do, and you're going to be more like successful and make sure that your partner is like happier and do all that stuff. So to me, it always felt like the manlier, smarter thing to do. It always came out of, which you can kind of understand. It always came out of necessity and as another tool belt to make sure that honestly, I didn't feel as shitty as about the intercourse that probably wasn't going to be good.
Yeah. The only thing I regret about my work, and I actually don't regret that much, because like I'm all about mutual pleasure. I'm mm-hmm. all about clitoral stimulation. I think that there is this sort of orgasm gap that comes up a lot around intercourse. So I'm really all about promoting clitoracy and outer course. And I actually believe that we should care about mutual pleasure for our partners mm-hmm. and want to make that happen. The only thing that I'm a little regretful about my work is I would never want men to use "she comes first" in like a macho way to be like, here's how great I am at making a woman come. Or mm-hmm. I would hate for a woman to also feel pressure to orgasm.
Yeah, they already have enough of that.
Because a guy has that expectation. What?
They already have enough of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'd hate like, you know, for a woman to feel like, oh, like, he read "She Comes First," and now suddenly, like, I'm like this orgasm object that needs to come for him, you know?
Yeah, I you know, I'm not going to say that hasn't happened, but I think it's pretty on the low percentage of where it went to, but...
And when you read the book, it really came out of my own dysfunction and my yeah. own sense of low sexual self-esteem.
For sure.
You know? You know, I don't want it to ever get like sort of co-opted as like part of the game or something like that.
Oh my God, know? The game. I forgot about that. You know, it's really funny. The one dude that talked to me about the game in high school, I remember he came, it was our sophomore year, and he came to class and he was explaining how he had read the game and about how like you need to wear something on your wrist, like to flashy, to catch the girl's attention, all this shit. And he was trying so hard to tell me like the exact way to get a girl. 5 years later, he comes out. He's like the gayest dude I know. And I was like, okay. I was like, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I never understood any of that or any of those psychological tactics or
I think it comes
rules,
from
you know.
It's like from guys who were trying to embrace that seeking side, you know, but they're looking at it. Like, you know, as literally the game, like they're trying to do it like sports where it isn't really, I think the biggest thing is just understanding kind of like what you had spoken about earlier, which is we like as men, generally, a lot of times we can have that initial metabolizing of a lustful thought and wanting to get it. Whereas for a female, most of the time, if this is a hetero relationship, like, you got to kind of build to it. You got to have little cues. There has to be this whole thing that allows them to get there. And I think a lot of guys don't get that.
Yeah. And then I think a lot of guys also, like Dylan, I have so many men in my practice or that I come across who, like, once things are starting to get a little familiar and predictable, they don't know how to blend in some newness. And so for them, the only way they know how to get psychological sexual stimulation is really through cheating, you know, or going off into like internet porn and chat rooms and paid sex. And I have nothing against internet porn, chat rooms, or paid sex, but you did like sort of bring up like the challenge of like, how do you still find your partner sexy? Or how do you still get those cues out of a long-term relationship?
What is it, by taking time out with each other or trying out something new, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's like an unobvious answer. But again, for me, I would say like, what has been the secret of like my ongoing sexual pleasure coming from a place of total sexual dysfunction? Mm-hmm. How did I end up in a good place? Well, I picked someone that I'm really attracted to, and that attraction just continues. I mean, my body changes as I age, her body changes as she ages. But you know what? There's still some kind of core chemistry that was there and is still there. Mm-hmm. Secondly, like I said, like we have what I call the sex script or the sexual environment. It really works, and it's not pressure-based. I'm not worried or thinking about my performance. Like, we have a sex script that we can turn to that's actually relaxing, it's meditative, it's really arousing. And then you add on to that some psychological stimulation. You embrace talking about fantasy, or you embrace watching or reading things that are sexy, or you go out into the world and you do something that's a little novel or sexual. It's not tremendous.
Steal someone's car together. Yeah.
You know, go off and like become polyamorous. Not that I could, yes, but you know, like, so it's sort of like these, having these different levels, you know, having that level of attraction, having that level of comfort and communication, and then having a level of newness or novelty that you can sort of like layer in. And I don't know, for me, it all works together. It's kept me going.
It's a very synergistic, that's the word I was thinking of, synergistic relationship. Okay. And so you would also, before we finish up, like, why do you, you talk about the sex recession that you would, I think you were in an article about it, or you had written about, no, you were in an article from Cosmo about it. And the person that wrote the article, I'm not going to lie, a little bit was kind of annoying. But the part about you was good was, they were saying that there's this talk of a sex recession, and it is self-reported that millennials are having more sex, but it's like we're enjoying it or being more, we're taking more charge with it. But have you, with your clients or who you deal with, or just as a growing man who you've talked to, do you feel like there's anything pointing you to like, this is why millennials are having less sex, especially with the there's this hookup culture, and we have apps, dude. Like, I could go on an app right now and probably at least hit someone up that it might work out with.
I never had anything close to that.
Yeah.
I had to be like in a room on my own.
I know, it sounds horrible. I'm so sorry.
Like, and I'm so bad at breaking the ice or getting to know.
Oh man.
Something.
Yeah, me too.
That app, although I probably would have just spent all my time on that app and got nothing else done in my life.
Yeah, it's distracting.
So I didn't write that article on the sex recession.
Yes.
I didn't do the research. I believe it was written in The Atlantic. I know it's a very thoroughly thought through and researched and thoughtful piece. Mm-hmm. I know it's controversial, but I remember the writer really put years of research into thinking about the piece and percolating the piece. So I know that there's a lot in there. I didn't write the piece though. And I probably, just going off of my practice here in New York or the lecturing that I do, I probably wouldn't have observed like what I would have called a sex recession.
Yeah.
You know, I would have observed that like a lot more people are able to enjoy solo pleasure, men and women, without being like
weird
anxious
about
it.
Yeah.
What else would I, what else? A lot of people are able to enjoy sexual relationships that might not be counted as sex if you're only looking at sexual intercourse.
Yeah, true.
So whether we're looking at like oral sex, hooking up without intercourse, mutual masturbation, things, you know, remote sex, we're seeing a lot of now, you know, during COVID. So I wouldn't point to a sex recession in that sense, maybe less intercourse happening, but maybe not. But again, Dylan, though, I think what I would say, though, is I do notice a lot more anxiety around sex amongst young people than I ever experienced. Or there is a lot more masturbation happening that's being fueled, I think, just by, you know, easy access to porn. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just something I observe.
But there is so much to it that it could lead towards like a imagining of sex that is not truthful. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And a lot more. So I guess what I'm noticing, which is interesting, I haven't thought about it this way, is like a lot more sort of comfort and resources to be sexual with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Vibrators, sex toys, porn, chat rooms, even paid sex opportunities, although I'll keep that sort of off. And a lot of sexual anxiety around actual sex with a person, especially as you said, as it starts to have some kind of stake, like, oh, do I really want to be here? Or shit, I really want to be here and now I'm really nervous because I'm really here because I really do want to be here. I really want to be with this person.
Yeah.
Am I going to be, you know, the right kind of lover?
Yeah. And, you know, it might, like, going off of what you were saying, it might even be that people now are so good at knowing what makes them feel comfortable and at ease and what they want, that when they're in a situation where they can even sense that they might not get that, it's easier for them to know, oh, I don't like this, this doesn't work for me, and then to lead them down the pathway of like, this might not be as good. Whereas before, when you weren't able to fully be with yourself, you just had to go out there and figure it out because it was either that or you just weren't getting laid, you know?
Right. Do you think people are really able to like almost pick the sex they want from a menu and they know the menu they're looking for? And if that somebody's not on that menu in some way, they can feel like, oh, I'll just go to the next person?
Well, I think it's impossible to know what someone will be like sexually until you're with them. So I think you can't pick from that until you have been with that person. However, I think for me personally, the more partners you've had, the more you know what you like and what you don't like, and the more you can kind of spot it very quickly. And there's nothing wrong to do with that person. It's just you guys don't sync up, you know? So I think that might lead to a lot more one or two encounters because you go, yeah, this probably isn't gonna link up. So it's not maybe like a menu per se, but you go like, oh yeah, this has something that, if you want to use that analogy, yeah, this has an ingredient that I know I'm not a fan of. And I've tried to like peppercorns. I don't like peppercorns. So I see that this person has peppercorns in them. I'm good. We like nothing to do wrong with them. So I think to a certain degree, there's a little bit more personalization, which is good, but can be frustrating because you're like, oh, this is like that. I know I don't like that. Damn. All right. Got to find, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. There's also no fun in sort of just getting exactly what you think you want.
Yeah, okay. True.
Right? Like, I always loved about sex, like, finding the attraction, the unknown.
Uh-huh.
Who is this person? What are they going to offer? And, like,
I've never done this before.
Never done this, or they're totally different looking or
seen
than I would ever want. And let me ask you a question, Dylan. Mm. What do you think? If I'm just working on your gut response, like,
yeah.
Living in this age of like a lot of, for men especially and women, just so much access to porn.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, if anything, are the effects of porn on the actual sex lives of younger people today, millennials, let's say?
Well, I stopped watching it because I thought it was affecting me with other people. And I think I was right because I remember being in sexual situations and imagining it looking like a POV video. It has to look this good, like the lighting has to, and then that's not how people look in real life. You know what I mean? They're not gonna, and in the video, you feel like it's all that, like in the video, the person is fully into you because that's their job. They're acting, they're full. So if you don't see that, it might not, now that I think about it now, I think I was expecting a attraction or enthusiasm that might not always be there when you're first with someone. I don't know if I necessarily think it's bad for a lot of dudes I know, but I've talked to multiple dudes who are like, I think I should stop watching porn, or I think I should at least pull back from it. And I think if anything, as guys, we get down this rabbit hole of being like, what's okay, we already watched this, what's a weirder thing to watch, and what's a, and I think that can affect you a little bit in just being desensitized to just being with someone that you like and are attracted to, if you aren't at least aware of, I'm just going off and doing this, and I know that's not what I'm going to get in real life, you know?
Right. So you think it could lead to the development of a set of expectations that starts to almost become part of your sexual temperament?
100%.
It gets replicated so often that these expectations really get internalized. And so what you're doing by stopping watching porn is sort of decoupling, trying to sort of vacate those expectations to get back to some sort of more authentic sense sexual. Of your own sexual self.
Yeah, because, you know, we're creatures of habit. So if you're used to watching the, when I was doing it, you know the videos you like, you know the actresses you like. So you go to that video, you watch it, your body goes, oh, I know what this is. I'm in this habit. And then all of those things start to switch on, and it leads to those, I forget the word, but it's like the pathways that it all just plays out. So
can I ask you, do you think there's benefits? You talked about some of the negatives. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's benefits as well to
to watching porn?
Again, you know, like I didn't grow up, like I work with guys now, you said you're 29?
27, yeah.
27. So I don't think I've met a 27-year-old who has had a voluntary, non-porn-based masturbatory ejaculation. These are guys who have had wet dreams, nocturnal emissions, but I don't think I've met, like, rare is the 27-year-old guy I've met who, when it comes to masturbating, will be like, I'm just going to use my imagination. Or I'm going to think about that girl I had sex with 2 weeks ago.
Well, number one, now you have. And number two, I think positives about it can be, if you're someone that thinks too much, has a lot of anxiety or whatever, it allows you to completely be distracted and focus on that. So you're in it, and it is that time that you're present and watching whatever that is.
Are you saying during sex you can?
You were asking what's a positive of it, and you're asking for a positive from watching porn that relates to during intercourse?
Well, and we've been focusing on the negative. In fact, I just gave you what can sound like a negative. I don't deal with men who use their own erotic imagination. So it's so easy to talk about the negative. It's like an interesting exercise, like maybe there's some positives
to it. I'm trying to, because I'm a pretty optimistic guy, so I think I should be able to, if there is one, find a positive. I would say, number one, it depends on the type of porn you're watching, because if you're watching something that's like pretty disrespectful, don't know if that's going to be positive to your female partner, unless, but then again, there's people that like that. So yeah, you know what? If you're with someone that, okay. I found one. Here we go. Yeah. I think you might be in the same. Let's say you start hooking up with someone that says that they're into BDSM. All right. Or something like that. You've never done that before. So I'll just say me. So me, Dylan, I've never done that before. But I really like this girl, and I want to do my best to fulfill her, to give her pleasure, and I'm a little excited by it. But instead of me going in raw and never having done it before with her, I do a little bit of experimentation. I do some research. I go to those websites. I watch some different videos, enough so that I have a couple tricks up my sleeve. I've seen people do it well, I would say, because they're doing it for a big audience. So then when I come, I feel confident, I feel ready, and then I lay it down. There we go.
Okay. So it's a little like an educational tool.
Yes. For certain kinks like that, I would say. For normal sex, I don't really think it's educational. I think that leads to men doing what I've heard multiple women call jackhammering, which they think is good. And I luckily had a girlfriend that was like, that doesn't feel good for me at all, and so I never did it again. But I think a lot of dudes will watch that sex because porn is so male-centric and for the male gaze that they go like, oh, this looks good. This is what I'm seeing. The girl seems to be having a good time. She's probably not half the time.
That's interesting. I read some Pornhub data. Like, Pornhub publishes all of this data.
Yeah.
Based on people's trends. And one year, I forgot which year, but I think lesbian porn was the number one choice for women masturbating on their own. Straight women.
My girlfriend did that. Yeah, my ex-girlfriend did.
And I think, and when you drill down, it's because there's so much more accurate clitoral stimulation.
Yes.
Than there would be in heterosexual.
Oh, porn. Yeah. It's probably.
But what about watching porn with a partner? Can that be valuable?
I think that can be valuable if you're trying to see what the other person likes. If you enjoy seeing that person get aroused. However, I had it where it was very negative because the girl I was with didn't like the kind of shit I liked, got upset at me. We got in a fight about it, which I think can happen with it, which is one of the negatives that everyone knows that can happen with. But yeah, it could be positive. You could see.
Yeah, but so she went to a self-esteem place or like.
Yes. Jealousy, upset. Yeah.
You like that, so you must not like me.
Yeah. Or you're an idiot. How do you like this? Or like this? Because you know, some porn can feel kind of weird. I think here's what it is. It was a while ago. I think it was like a casting couch type of video, and I think she was like, "You like that these girls don't know that they're getting into the. You know what I mean?" So she was like, that's kind of weird. And then I was like, well, wait, I'm not a... And then it just became this because accusatory kind of thing, you know?
Right. See, but that could have happened. What I would say is, yeah, I like the fantasy of that. I'm not saying I'm going to go out and be one of these casting directors, but
or
I
assault
like
a woman,
But I like the fantasy of that kind of hookup or that kind of thing. Like, I would worry about your girl, that woman, not... whoever she was, also judging you for anything you might like that's different.
There was judgment for sure. We were in a immature relationship in our early 20s, and we learned a lot of things. We pushed through it. But yeah, we both had some issues surrounding that, and me not being fully emotionally available. And, you know, that's a whole nother... That's a whole nother talk. But yeah, I think though there can be... benefits to it, but I think guys can get obsessive and with so much choice they can lock on to one thing. So you have to at least I just think we're aware of all of our different habits and how, you know, don't drink to excess, don't whatever, you know. So if you're watching porn, know what kind of porn you like, know that it's good and know that it can be helpful, but don't drink 3 6-packs worth of porn in one day, you know. Don't hurt your sexual liver, if you want to call it, at least to an extent. And yeah, if you want to use it for educational, for certain things, I think it can definitely be helpful. But I do think as a guy asking a girl what kind of porn you like, and even maybe like, for both people in the relationship, I think it could be helpful if you were completely open to go, show me what you watch, and not in a judgmental way, but just to see, this is what turns that person on. Okay, absolutely. How can I incorporate that?
Right, like I work with guys, Dylan, who their partners are like, what do you fantasize about? Or guys will tell me, I have no fantasies. I don't have any fantasies. And then when you start to talk about the porn they watch, oh, they have fantasies. Because they turn to one kind of porn, or one erotic theme, or one clip. And in that world is a world of fantasy.
True. But I think, because there's like that stepmom, stepsister porn, right? I don't think a lot of guys are watching that wishing they could hook up with their stepsister or stepmom. So I don't know if it's that exact fantasy. What would you think with that?
Well, you know, that whole thing is like, they call it faux-cest, F-A-U-X, cest, because it's not, obviously nobody's depicting real incest.
Yes.
And I've talked to some performers and producers who say, that's basically just a quick way of taking any generic clip and trying to make it hot or palatable.
Right. Yeah.
So you have the same actress showing up as stepsis. In the next video, it could be the same video and she could be showing up as the MILF. You know, like they're literally trying to take generic clips and just label it with some kind of
a little bit of a taboo. Yeah, okay. And a buzzword.
A little bit of a buzzword for SEO purposes and a taboo. So I would say that we are attracted to the taboo. We are attracted to like the idea of something could be naughty or wrong.
Yes.
You know?
And it's probably also because there's a lot more divorced parents these days. So you're at least around that more.
Yeah. And we do live in more blended families. And, you know, I think taboos do speak to desires that we don't necessarily listen. There's a difference between a thought, an urge, and a behavior. And I think we're way too hard. Where we should sometimes be hard on sexual behaviors, especially ones that are harmful or non-consensual, absolutely have to be hard on sexual behaviors. I think that we can be easier on ourselves about the kinds of sexual thoughts that come into mind and turn us on.
Especially because maybe that would prevent them from leading to a behavior. If you were able to talk about it and dissect it a little bit, then that person might feel more okay with it and then potentially understand it's not good compared to internalizing it and then turning it into a behavior that's detrimental and harmful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome.
Oh, shit.
You gotta go. Man. Yep, let's end on that.
This was fun.
Awesome, Ian, this was great, man. Thank you so much. She Comes First is the book by it. He's got a bunch of other books that I'm sure are all great, and he's got a shit ton of articles on his website that you can go through and read. I've read a couple of them. They're great. It's iankerner.com, right?
That's right. And I have a new book coming out in April, so maybe we'll reconnect for that.
I would love to. Awesome. Have a good rest of the day, Ian. Thanks so much, man.
Take care.
See ya.
Bye.